The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
So they had AA meetings, sort of. They just talked every time, and like they would always ask us, raise your hand if you, darn, I need to hurry, raise your hand if you lied, cheated or stole as a result to get alcohol and drugs this weekend. Everyone always raised their hand. But I always sat in front because I liked what they had to say and I like heard them. And I sort of felt like I was either going to die or get saved. I really felt like that deep down. I just knew that. I would get help. And then this one day came where lots of times I tried to quit. Because people were like, dude, you are, like, out of control. Like, we don't want to hang out with you. Like, please don't drink if you come. And I was like, all right. So, and then I finally had a boyfriend, which that didn't happen very much because I acted like that. So I finally had this boyfriend, and he was a coke dealer, and I thought he was cool, and I was doing a lot of cocaine. So I was like, I won't drink anymore. So I quit drinking, sort of, for, like, 2 months, and then but did a lot of cocaine and other drugs. But then, and cocaine really messed me up. I mean, just made me really like psychologically down, more so than I feel like it brought me down fast, especially just that stint of a few months of doing a lot. So hurry up, Lauren. My point is the same thing happened again that I said happened on my first drunk, except it was even worse. It's actually on videotape, so I have my last drunk on videotape. It's just disgusting. I pee my pants in public. I'm humping the car, and then I'm trying to drive home. I mean, it sounds silly, but just really provocative in public. And not just, like, humping the car as a joke. Just, like, gross. Just crazy. Like, get that girl out of here, you know? And that was what it was like all the time. And so I'm doing that. Someone has to bring me home. And then the next night, my boyfriend won't talk to me. I guess I do all this other stuff. I'm blacked out. But my dad, in the morning, he's like, at that point, I live with my dad because my mom kicked me out and moved away because of her heart. Because of my stress. And my dad was like, he shamed me when I woke up. He was like, he didn't know that I didn't know what I did, but I guess I just said, I pretty much talked all about really provocative like sex that I wanted to have with my boyfriend to my dad. It blacked out. And it's crazy. I was like 16. It's just sick. I mean, it's fine, but it just makes me feel bad today because I'm not like that. Because I've been sober 11 years, and all these magical things have happened, and the 12 steps have saved my life. So I did that a lot. So then the next day, he wouldn't talk to me. He said, you're a pig. That's probably where I got that noun to describe myself as, because that's what he said in my last drunk, that you're a pig, and he hung up the phone. And my friends were like, nah, we're done with you. And then there's these one other kids who live behind the street from my dad, and I went to their house that night and just drank like a 24-pack and nothing happened. So then I was like, I felt so bad. I never felt so bad ever. I mean, at the time. So then I felt like I wanted to call Billy, this guy who was the AA dude from my school, the guy with the tattoos and the motorcycle. And so I had his name in my wallet. So I called him, and I'm totally taking too long. I called him, and he was he didn't answer. So then I was with this girl who drove me home because I couldn't drive, and she was like, I'll just take you to one. We'll find it in the Yellow Pages. So she took me to one. It was away from the house that I lived in. I mean, it was away from the town I lived in, away from where Billy lived. And I walk into this random meeting on a Sunday night in Escondido, California. And as soon as I walk in, Billy's sitting right by the door. And for me, that was eerie. That was like an acid trip. At the time, that was what I could compare things to, was like drugs and alcohol experiences. And for me, it felt like, holy shit, we're both, oh my God. Like, I felt like I was being saved. There was Billy, and it turns out he never goes to the meeting. It was his good old buddy's anniversary that night, and he came. And it was just, a random occurrence for me to, like, pay attention. And I saw him, and I started crying, and I knew I was done, so... That was sort of my first meeting where I heard that guy talk about peeing on himself. And it was a regular people's meeting. And I was definitely the youngest and really crying the whole time, but really identifying. I felt it was so eerie how right everything felt. And it sort of made me believe in God. I mean, it just sort of made me believe in magic or like angels or something or the universe. I don't know. But so then... I still did drugs, and I didn't know that in AA you don't do drugs, because I really didn't hear anyone talk about it, because I just went to this one clubhouse, and I think they don't talk about alcohol. So finally, some young guy I met was like, oh, you're not sober if you still do drugs. So I changed my date, like 2 weeks later. So that was the day I got sober, and I've been sober ever since. And great, 10 minutes left, okay. So that was, I took a long time to tell you that. So I've been thinking, so I took the 12, so I got an AA sponsor. I did what we're supposed to do, or what is suggested, right? So I got a sponsor within 30 days. She happened to be the chair of the Young People's Committee in San Diego. So that was like what I would do with her, is go to these Young People's meetings and join the service structure, which I know you guys are on NYCPA, some of you. So I joined GIDSDPA. And we ended up, that was like what I did for service from the beginning. And then I got a group that I went to, and I found Young People's, which was really important to me, because I finally saw that I could have friends and I could have fun. They were doing like fun, more fun things than my drinking. I mean, we sat and I described the car fun. Like, that was what I did, was just get loaded and act crazy. So it was really fun. Even, they weren't well behaved. They had tattoos. I mean, not that people with tattoos aren't well-behaved. I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to say that. But, like, I thought they looked really cool. They looked cooler than my crowd. They had, like, blue hair and tattoos, and they were cool and sober a long time, or at least 2, 4, 5 years, which was a really long time for me. And people were really nice. Being a newcomer was really awesome. If you're new, welcome, welcome, welcome. I loved when people told me I was the most important person in the room. And I really believe that if you are new and you want to hear that. I think that about you. Because we need newcomers for us to stay sober, because that's how we got sober, was someone who was sober helped us get sober. And when we want AA to continue, and we believe that it helps, and we believe and we know that you're suffering, and that AA really, really can show you a way to live without alcohol and drugs. I'm sorry I'm saying drugs, I'm sure it doesn't offend you guys, or young people. So... I got a sponsor, and I got really involved with GIDSDPA. We ended up hosting a conference. I just got all these friends. A fellowship grew up about me, and I remember hanging out after. I did so much hanging out. I know we all talk about it, like hanging out all the time till 3 in the morning, smoking cigarettes, drinking Red Bull, drinking coffee, doing whatever, doing crazy stuff, doing not crazy stuff, just hanging out all the time. I'm sure some of you guys do that still, or now. I don't do that anymore, really. But I did on last Saturday night, which I felt really proud of. It was the eve of my 11th anniversary, and I stayed out till 4 a.m. with some of you. So that was cool. One thing I wanted to tell you was, the service was really helpful. A fellowship grew up among me, and I had all of these friends, and I had all this stuff to do. And I experienced a thing where my family was like, dude, like, you're just going to leave every night? Like, I hear people talk about that, especially people still live with their parents who are young that get sober. They weren't that into how much all of a sudden my life became AA. And we worked it out, you know? Sponsor helped me. And I really had, like, a really, I had to take a fifth year of high school because I didn't do anything in high school. So that happened in sobriety, and I was like a member of AA there, and I showed up there and ended up speaking at graduation. I had like 20 AAs in the crowd, and that was really cool. And then I ended up going to college by myself, you know, like walking, no one in my family went to college, so I like decided I wanted to go. Not that, and I feel like, I don't even say that, I'm running out of time. So I walked up and literally, so this is some things I want to share. I want to share about how like AA, like certain examples throughout my life of how AA has helped me and like held my hand or been my source of, I'd like to call it higher power. I have like a hard time with the God concept. I have a hard time with the fact that we get to make it up. And then I have a hard time believing everything that's already like made up. And but I'm cool with saying I've had a spiritual experience. And the way that I react to life today is really because of the 12 steps. And I really live the 12 steps. I mean, this is like, I'm not even saying I really live the 12 steps. You can watch me. I actually realize that the way that I react to life is 12 step oriented because it's become like my way of living, really. And I mean, and that doesn't mean by any way that I don't make mistakes, which happen a lot, all the time, every day. But I do have these tools to deal with them. Because, like, it's very difficult for me to deal with the pain that comes from making mistakes. Hence, I don't like pain, I don't like dealing with life, I don't have coping skills. Like, the 12 steps are my coping skills today. And they really are, and I really live them. And it's, like, awesome. I mean, it is when I think about it from where I came. And speaking is so helpful for me because I never talk about what it was like. And I just never get to do this any other time. Even if I'm working with a newcomer, it just never happens like this. So thank you for allowing me the opportunity to help myself. The other thing, so I got a sponsor and I worked the steps and I began helping people and that was useful. But so I walked on, so here's my list of awesome things that AA has done for me. So I walked onto college campus. I had never done it. I didn't even know like how to register. No one in my family knew how. And this guy from AA, he like literally held my hand and took me to the office and waited until I was done filling out the paperwork. And then it was time for me. I ended up studying abroad. I went to a community college. I studied abroad. And these two AAs, it was like my first time leaving AA for 4 months because I was like very in the middle of AA. And like these AAs started this meeting for me over the internet, which didn't really work because I didn't have that much internet. But like all these AAs tried to reach out and help, and everyone gave me their address on postcards so that I could write postcards to people, like AA postcards, like reaching out. And these two AA girls brought me to the airport. And then I ended up moving to the bottom of the Grand Canyon for 3 years, which is random. I know it's a loop. But I ended up moving to the bottom of the Grand Canyon for 3 years, which was weird because I was also like concerned because I was leaving AA there's no meeting. There's only 17 people who live down there, and they party hard, right? For real. They drink a Ducate when they wake up at 10 or whatever. For real. It's a party. But I felt like this, at this point, after going to Italy, I was starting to become like a person outside of AA. I was like, just like a person who was sober, not just like an AA member who hung out in AA. And that was really important, and that's like totally what my life is like. Huge. I mean, it's very much not all AA today. Like AA is like a section of it, you know, and it's very much intermingled. And lots of the people that I have lots of engagements with or like interactions with don't even know that I'm in AA, and they still, and they like me, and they think I'm good. You know, I'm like a good person, and they would rely on me, and that's cool because it wasn't like that, and it was years before I grew out of the box. And so moving to the canyon was awesome, but also lonesome because I didn't have AA there, and I learned to do it in this other way. Like I was, they have that word for it, like the people who live in the middle of nowhere, lonesome or something. Loner. So I was a loner. There were meetings on the rim, but these special things happened. I'm sticking to my list of awesome AA people who have helped me. So this guy found out on the rim meeting that I was celebrating 5 years, so he hiked down and like came to the desk where I worked and like brought me a token and a card signed from all the people. So that was like what happened on my 5-year anniversary. On my 6-year anniversary, I was on a river trip for free, this awesome river trip for 17 days, rowboats. And I don't know why I have to put those details because it was awesome. And it was like my 6-year anniversary was going to happen and everyone on the boats party too. And I was like, it's cool. I just won't tell anyone. It'll be my special day and it's fine. And I was also really scared because that kind of adventure is scary. But I was trying to like be connected to God and trust that, you know, maybe I'll dry and I'll just be cool with it. And and I look over and the guy who's the trip leader has these tokens all over his belt. And it turns out he is 19 years sober and he got sober at 18 or something. So he's like a young person with all his time and he's a trip leader. So, and then two of his sponsees are on the trip. So that happened. And then we had meetings and I literally could talk to him about my fear. And to watch him, I really watched him do his 11th step every morning. Like, we moved slow. People were mad at him because we, like, moved slow in the morning, but it was because he meditated every morning. So that was rad. And then another time I hiked out, I would get, like, really thirsty for a meeting down there because, well, of course I would. So one time I hiked out and I ran into this guy and we started chatting, and within like an hour of chatting, turns out he's been sober like 17 years too, and little awesome things like that happened. And then I moved to New York City, and a friend of mine knew that I was moving, and she saw me off again at the airport, who's in AA, and I didn't know anyone in New York City, and I was so scared. And I'm sure you guys who have moved here, it's scary, man. It is a hard place to move to. So she called when I got off the plane. She was like, hey, oh, this guy Peter called me, and he isn't sober anymore, but he was sober, and he was like, hey, I'm Thea's friend. I'm outside. Like, she called someone in AA, and then he came and picked me up in New York City in a car, which no one even has in New York City, and then took me to a meeting immediately and, like, introduced me to women. So that was, like, a rad thing that an AA person did. And, oh, I want to tell you, darn, I want to tell you that a neat thing about, I was always wondering why I went to the Grand Canyon. Besides, it's, like, awesome and fun, like, why would a sober AA go to a place where there's no meetings? And they drink and drug all the time. And my sponsor, I felt very strongly driven to go there. My sponsor at the time was like, man, we can go anywhere. Like, you'll be a lighthouse. Go for it, you know? So I went, and when I went to put in my, like, two-month notice, I decided I was leaving. And I actually, a lot of it had to do with, like, I'm interested in going to meetings and, like, getting out of here. And I was telling him that they knew at this point that I was sober and in AA. And I told my assistant manager that in his office, and then I went home to whatever. And he came up to me that night, like, sobbing and trashed, and he was having his bottom, and he got sober the next day. And I sponsored him down there, and then for, like, a year after, and he's still sober, like, 4 years right now. So that was awesome. And, okay, well, I'm done, I guess. So the moral of the story is... AA is such a gift, man. I just wanted to read something. It's just really cool to be sober, and I think around your anniversary, you reflect on it, you know, and my life is just so different, and I really have these coping skills, and they came from the 12 steps, and I just would strongly encourage you to take them with your sponsor and reach out to people. And so... I wanted to say this is about spiritual awakening, because I told you I still, and this is new, at the beginning of my sobriety, I was cool with God. Like, I called God, God, and I got on my knees and I prayed, and I didn't know what it was, but I was like, I was cool with it. And later in my sobriety, I became more critical of it and more confused by it and more, and just struggle with even saying it. So this is really helpful for me at this point. But I believe that I live a spiritual life, but I have a hard time with the God concept. Maybe there are as many definitions of spiritual awakening as there are people who have had them, but certainly each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things which they have in common are not too hard to understand. When a man or woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him he is really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed, because he has laid hold a source of strength which in one way or another he had, this is the hard word, hitherto denied himself. He finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. So that's that. Thank you.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.